Chapter 87. Was this? Child's parents were poor people who lived in a court. Child's eldest sister bought a necklace, common necklace, made of large black wooden beads. Child, being fond of toys, cribbed the necklace, hid it, played with it, cut the string, and swallowed a bead. Child thought it capital fun, went back next day, and swallowed another bead. Apostrophe, bless my heart, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, what a dreadful thing. I beg your pardon, sir. Go on. Apostrophe, next day, child swallowed two beads. The day after that, he treated himself to three, and so on, till in a week's time he had got through the necklace 25 beads in all. The sister, who was an industrious girl, and seldom treated herself to a bit of finery, cried her eyes out at the loss of the necklace, looked high and low for it, but, I needn't say, didn't find it. A few days afterwards, the family were at dinner, baked shoulder of mutton and potatoes under it. The child, who wasn't hungry, was playing about the room, when suddenly there was heard a devil of a noise, like a small hailstorm. Don't do that, my boy, said the father. I ain't a doing nothing, said the child. Well, don't do it again, said the father. There was a short silence, and then the noise began again, worse than ever. If you don't mind what I say, my boy, said the father, you'll find yourself in bed, in something less than a pig's whisper. He gave the child a shake to make him obedient, and such a rattling ensued as nobody ever heard before. Why, damn, it's in the child, said the father, he's got the croup in the wrong place. No, I haven't, father, said the child, beginning to cry, it's the necklace. I swallowed it, father. The father caught the child up, and ran with him to the hospital, the beads in the boy's stomach rattling all the way with the jolting, and the people looking up in the air, and down in the cellars, to see where the unusual sound came from. He's in the hospital now, apostrophe, said Jack Hopkins, and he makes such a devil of a noise when he walks about, that they're obliged to muffle him in a watchman's coat, for fear he should wake the patients. Apostrophe, that's the most extraordinary case I ever heard of, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, with an emphatic blow on the table. Oh, that's nothing, apostrophe, said Jack Hopkins. Is it, Bob? Apostrophe, certainly not, apostrophe, replied Bob Sawyer. Very singular things occur in our profession, I can assure you, sir, apostrophe, said Hopkins. So I should be disposed to imagine, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick. Another knock at the door announced a large-headed young man in a black wig, who brought with him a scorbutic youth in a long stock. The next comer was a gentleman in a shirt emblazoned with pink anchors, who was closely followed by a pale youth with a plated watch guard. The arrival of a prim personage in clean linen and cloth boots rendered the party complete. The little table with the green baize cover was wheeled out, the first installment of punch was brought in a white jug, and the succeeding 3 hours were devoted to VINGT et UN at sixpence a dozen, which was only once interrupted by a slight dispute between the scorbutic youth and the gentleman with the pink anchors, in the course of which, the scorbutic youth intimated a burning desire to pull the nose of the gentleman with the emblems of hope, in reply to which, that individual expressed his decided unwillingness to accept of any sauce on gratuitous terms, either from the irascible young gentleman with the scorbutic countenance, or any other person who was ornamented with a head. When the last natural had been declared, and the profit and loss account of fish and sixpences adjusted, to the satisfaction of all parties, Mr. Bob Sawyer rang for supper, and the visitors squeezed themselves in two corners while it was getting ready. It was not so easily got ready as some people may imagine. First of all, it was necessary to awaken the girl, who had fallen asleep with her face on the kitchen table. This took a little time, and, even when she did answer the bell, another quarter of an hour was consumed in fruitless endeavors to impart to her a faint and distant glimmering of reason. The man to whom the order for the oysters had been sent had not been told to open them, It is a very difficult thing to open an oyster with a limp knife and a two-pronged fork, and very little was done in this way. Very little of the beef was done either, and the ham, which was also from the German sausage shop round the corner, was in a similar predicament. However, there was plenty of porter in the tin can, and the cheese went a great way, for it was very strong. So upon the whole, perhaps, the supper was quite as good as such matters usually are. After supper, another jug of punch was put upon the table, together with a paper of cigars, and a couple of bottles of spirits. Then there was an awful pause, and this awful pause was occasioned by a very common occurrence in this sort of place, but a very embarrassing one notwithstanding. The fact is, the girl was washing the glasses. The establishment boasted for. We do not record the circumstance, as at all derogatory to Mrs. Rattle, for there never was a lodging house yet that was not short of glasses. The landlady's glasses were little, thin, blown glass tumblers, and those which had been borrowed from the public house were great, dropsical, bloated articles, each supported on a huge gouty leg. This would have been in itself sufficient to have possessed the company with the real state of affairs, but the young woman of all work had prevented the possibility of any misconception arising in the mind of any gentleman upon the subject by forcibly dragging every man's glass away long before he had finished his beer, and audibly stating, despite the winks and interruptions of Mr. Bob Sawyer, that it was to be conveyed downstairs and washed forthwith. It is a very ill wind that blows nobody any good. The prim man in the cloth boots, who had been unsuccessfully attempting to make a joke during the whole time the round game lasted, saw his opportunity and availed himself of it. The instant the glasses disappeared, he commenced a long story about a great public character, whose name he had forgotten, making a particularly happy reply to another eminent and illustrious individual whom he had never been able to identify. He enlarged at some length, and with great minuteness upon divers collateral circumstances, distantly connected with the anecdote in hand, but for the life of him, he couldn't recollect at that precise moment what the anecdote was, although he had been in the habit of telling the story with great applause for the last 10 years. Dear me, apostrophe said the prim man in the cloth boots, it is a very extraordinary circumstance. Apostrophe, I am sorry you have forgotten it, apostrophe said Mr. Bob Sawyer, glancing eagerly at the door, as he thought he heard the noise of glasses jingling. Very sorry. Apostrophe, so am I, apostrophe responded the prim man, because I know it would have afforded so much amusement. Never mind. I dare say I shall manage to recollect it, in the course of half an hour or so. Apostrophe, the prim man arrived at this point just as the glasses came back, when Mr. Bob Sawyer, who had been absorbed in attention during the whole time, said he should very much like to hear the end of it, for, so far as it went, it was, without exception, the very best story he had ever heard. The sight of the tumblers restored Bob Sawyer to a degree of equanimity which he had not possessed since his interview with his landlady. His face brightened up, and he began to feel quite convivial. Now, Betsy, apostrophe said Mr. Bob Sawyer, with great suavity, and dispersing, at the same time, the tumultuous little mob of glasses the girl had collected in the center of the table. Now, Betsy, the warm water. Be brisk, there's a good girl. Apostrophe, you can't have no warm water, apostrophe replied Betsy. No warm water. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Bob Sawyer. No, apostrophe, said the girl, with a shake of the head which expressed a more decided negative than the most copious language could have conveyed. Mrs. Rattle said you weren't to have none. Apostrophe, the surprise depicted on the countenances of his guests imparted new courage to the host. Bring up the warm water instantly, instantly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Bob Sawyer, with desperate sternness. No, I can't, apostrophe, replied the girl. Mrs. Rattle raked out the kitchen fire afore she went to bed, and locked up the kettle. apostrophe O. Never mind. Never mind. Pray don't disturb yourself about such a trifle, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, observing the conflict of Bob Sawyer's passions, as depicted in his countenance. Cold water will do very well. Apostrophe, oh, admirably, apostrophe said Mr. Benjamin Allen. My landlady is subject to some slight attacks of mental derangement, apostrophe remarked Bob Sawyer, with a ghastly smile. I fear I must give her warning. Apostrophe, no, don't, apostrophe said Ben Allen. I fear I must, apostrophe said Bob, with heroic firmness. I'll pay her what I owe her, and give her warning tomorrow morning. Apostrophe poor fellow, how devoutly he wished he could. Mr. Bob Sawyer's heart-sickening attempts to rally under this last blow communicated a dispiriting influence to the company, the greater part of whom, with the view of raising their spirits, attached themselves with extra cordiality to the cold brandy and water, the first perceptible effects of which were displayed in the renewal of hostilities between the scorbutic youth and the gentleman in the shirt. The belligerents vented their feelings of mutual contempt, for some time, in a variety of frownings and snortings, until at last the scorbutic youth felt it necessary to come to a more explicit understanding on the matter, when the following clear understanding took place. Sawyer, apostrophe said the scorbutic youth, in a loud voice. Well, naughty, apostrophe replied Mr. Bob Sawyer. I should be very sorry, Sawyer, apostrophe said Mr. Naughty, to create any unpleasantness at any friend's table, and much less at yours, Sawyer very, but I must take this opportunity of informing Mr. Gunter that he is no gentleman. Apostrophe, and I should be very sorry, Sawyer, to create any disturbance in the street in which you reside, apostrophe said Mr. Gunter, but I'm afraid I shall be under the necessity of alarming the neighbors by throwing the person who has just spoken out o window. Apostrophe, what do you mean by that, sir? Apostrophe inquired Mr. Naughty. What I say, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Gunter. I should like to see you do it, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Naughty. You shall feel me do it in half a minute, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Gunter. I request that you will favor me with your card, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Naughty. I'll do nothing of the kind, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Gunter. Why not, sir? Apostrophe inquired Mr. Naughty. Because you will stick it up over your chimney piece, and delude your visitors into the false belief that a gentleman has been to see you, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Gunter. Sir, a friend of mine shall wait on you in the morning, apostrophe said Mr. Naughty. Sir, I'm very much obliged to you for the caution, and I'll leave particular directions with the servant to lock up the spoons, apostrophe replied Mr. Gunter. At this point the remainder of the guests interposed, and remonstrated with both parties on the impropriety of their conduct, on which Mr. Naughty begged to state that his father was quite as respectable as Mr. Gunter's father, to which Mr. Gunter replied that his father was to the full as respectable as Mr. Naughty's father, and that his father's son was as good a man as Mr. Naughty, any day in the week. As this announcement seemed the prelude to a recommencement of the dispute, there was another interference on the part of the company, and a vast quantity of talking and clamoring ensued, in the course of which Mr. Naughty gradually allowed his feelings to overpower him, and professed that he had ever entertained a devoted personal attachment towards Mr. Gunter. To this Mr. Gunter replied that, upon the whole, he rather preferred Mr. Naughty to his own brother. On hearing which admission, Mr. Naughty magnanimously rose from his seat, and proffered his hand to Mr. Gunter. Mr. Gunter grasped it with affecting fervor, and everybody said that the whole dispute had been conducted in a manner which was highly honorable to both parties concerned. Now, apostrophe said Jack Hopkins, just to set us going again, Bob, I don't mind singing a song. Apostrophe and Hopkins, incited thereto by tumultuous applause, plunged himself at once into the king, God bless him, apostrophe which he sang as loud as he could, to a novel air, compounded of the Bay of Biscay, apostrophe and a frog he would. Apostrophe the chorus was the essence of the song, and, as each gentleman sang it to the tune he knew best, the effect was very striking indeed. It was at the end of the chorus to the first verse that Mr. Pickwick held up his hand in a listening attitude, and said, as soon as silence was restored, "Hush! I beg your pardon. I thought I heard somebody calling from upstairs." Apostrophe, a profound silence immediately ensued, and Mr. Bob Sawyer was observed to turn pale. "I think I hear it now, apostrophe," said Mr. Pickwick. "Have the goodness to open the door." Apostrophe, the door was no sooner opened than all doubt on the subject was removed. Apostrophe, "Mr. Sawyer! Mr. Sawyer!" Apostrophe, screamed a voice from the two-pair landing. "It's my landlady," apostrophe, said Bob Sawyer, looking round him with great dismay. "Yes, Mrs. Rattle." Apostrophe, "What do you mean by this, Mr. Sawyer?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied the voice, with great shrillness and rapidity of utterance. "Ain't it enough to be swindled out of one's rent, and money lent out of pocket besides, and abused and insulted by your friends, that dares to call themselves men, without having the house turned out of the window, and noise enough made to bring the fire engines here, at 2 o'clock in the morning? Turn them wretches away." Apostrophe, "You ought to be ashamed of yourselves," apostrophe, said the voice of Mr. Rattle, which appeared to proceed from beneath some distant bedclothes. "Ashamed of themselves," apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Rattle. "Why don't you go down and knock 'em every one downstairs? You would if you was a man." "Apostrophe, I should, if I was a dozen men, my dear," apostrophe, replied Mr. Rattle pacifically, "but they have the advantage of me in numbers, my dear." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.